You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we look at our top five favorite fathers in movies.
Yeah, it's Father's Day, man. It's time for this.
I agree. We covered Best Moms in Movies with Nicole Knepper.
That's right.
And we have Father's Day, and we have a new Superman movie. And the thing about Superman, Matt, is he has two fathers.
Yeah, he's got my two dads.
He does.
Remember that show?
I do.
Yeah, I'm trying to forget
it. Not fondly, though. So we figured what better time to cover our favorite movie dads.
Indeed.
We also have a guest joining us this week. Oh, this is a big guest. Former Film Spotting host, Maddie Robinson, Maddie Ballgame himself, is going to be joining us here very shortly.
That's right. And Maddie is perhaps best well-known, as you just mentioned, for his co-hosting of Film Spotting, 2007 through 2011.
Oh, I can't wait
to get... Was that like 190 episodes or something?
That is sick. I can't wait to get him and spill the dirt on Adam Kempinar.
Yeah, that's going to be... Well, we're going to air the dirty laundry.
We're also going eye for an eye on Man of Steel, the new Superman movie.
Cool.
We have reviews in theaters, Before Midnight and Frances Ha.
Sweet.
Plus a DVD review of Warm Bodies.
Yep.
Plus yourself, Matt, against Maddie Ballgame in Superman movie trivia.
I'm really glad he goes by Maddie and he's got a nickname so there won't be any confusion.
As am I.
Yeah, definitely. And the listeners are, I'm sure.
Not to mention a cinema war, Matt.
Oh, one for the ages.
Looking at Lois Lane.
I'm excited.
Jam-packed as always. So without further ado, Matt.
Let's bring in our guest. Matt, welcome to Cinema Jaw. Maddie.
Well, hey guys, thank you so much for having me.
I'm gonna jump right in with a question here. And I think this is the one we need to begin with, is how did you get the nickname Maddie Ballgame?
You know, there are so many different stories of how I got it. When I finally do, you know, a real talk show, when I go out on Letterman and so forth, you know, I mean, you guys are great. I want to come up with an anecdote. I really don't have one. I love baseball. I love baseball. I used to claim that I was, you know, in the farm system of the Minnesota Twins for a while. But it just sort of came organically, but it was made famous at a party one night where this guy just refused to call me Matt. So he would just scream at the top of his lungs, Maddie Ballgame, throughout the entire party, and it has stuck.
And this gentleman's name is not Adam Kempinar.
No, no, no. Yeah, Adam not known for his, you know, gregariousness, so...
So take us back to the beginning days of Film Spotting. We had Adam on here, and it's always interesting to hear how you guys got started and met. You were actually friends or roommates with the Sam, who was original co-host?
Sam Van Halgren and I actually went to Kenyon together, Kenyon College in Ohio. I went off to graduate school out east for acting, and I had just graduated. Sam had decided he was going to leave the show. And so they were auditioning different people, and Sam put me up for it. And so I actually moved from New York, where I was working, to Chicago, basically transplanted myself. Film Spotting was what I did. I'm also still an actor, but Film Spotting was my gig.
Pretty awesome.
That's living the dream right
there. It sure is. So you were on there for 190 episodes. That's a lot of top five lists.
You don't know the preparation that goes into that. We took it probably far too seriously. My preparation started on Sunday night, and we would record Wednesday.
My preparation for this show just started about an hour and a half ago.
See, but sometimes I think that's what you need, that spontaneity. What you get on the podcast and also the radio show is really only about one-tenth of all the material we were willing to bring to it. So,
do you have a favorite top five list or show on Film Spotting throughout the years?
You know, we did our top movies of the 2000s. That was probably my favorite because not only, you know, was I able to go out there and put out what I loved, but that was probably the most eye-opening for me, enlightening thing, hearing, especially from our viewers. We had a great, great, great audience. And to hear their picks expanded my cinema love and knowledge tenfold, because then right after that, I had to go out and see all these films that people adored.
What I love about Film Spotting, they still do it to this day, is the marathons where you would watch a bunch of movies of a particular genre, actor, director, and then critique all those and give out awards. Who came up with that idea?
That actually started, that was very early on, because both Well, Adam did go to, or he took film classes. Sam had never taken any film classes. They were film aficionados. But basically what they were trying to do was atone for their blind spots. And so
broaden their horizons.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, early on, they were doing, I couldn't believe it, top fives on musicals and Westerns that they had never been exposed to before. And actually, I couldn't believe the movies they hadn't seen. But that's why film spotting really served as a great film school. I mean, it really was. I was on there for 4 years and, you know, taught a class at the University of Chicago on film. So I really feel like that was my film school in everything that I was exposed to. And the marathons were really one of my favorite parts.
That is really cool. And, you know, before we went on the air, we were talking, you mentioned all the material that you guys brought to the table that you weren't able to get into the show. Who actually edited that? I mean, it's an interesting thing.
We had a great team. Number one, Adam would edit it. He is this type A, go, go, go kind of guy, brilliant guy. And if he's not doing something, he goes stir crazy. So, you know, and he has a great day job, but at night it was all film spotting. And so he would sit there, he would edit into the wee hours of the morning. We also had Golden Joe Dassault, who works for WBEZ. He was also great. And then Sam Van Halgren came on maybe about the third year that I was there and actually came on and listened to it and did a little editing himself. I didn't. I'm the most lazy person on the planet, so I didn't. I did the show. I never listened. I have not listened to a single film spotting episode.
Wow, you heard that here first on Cinema Jock. Maddie Ballgame has never listened to film spotting. That is crazy. Now, in all the movies that you reviewed with Adam, do you remember one in particular where you guys just did not see eye to eye, more heated than usual?
Oh, you know, I think we didn't have disagreements enough. And I'm trying to think of one. Actually, one doesn't come to mind, and because we never had a huge shouting match at all. That really wasn't what the show was about. I wish sometimes there was a dynamic like that, that something would come up and we'd start yelling at each other and you could throw out these one-liners. But one of the things that we always strayed away from is we wanted to celebrate film. And we wanted to point you towards different sort of films and filmmakers that are really adding and progressing film, the art of filmmaking. And so we were always basically champions and oftentimes on the same wavelength when it came to that. I mean, something like the Academy Awards, we didn't care at all about, because the Academy Awards are what they are. They're the Super Bowl. It's a spectacle. But it doesn't really reward what was really exciting in film the year before. So we tried, we hoped that, you know, if we could just plant the seed in just a couple people's heads that, hey, this film exists, this filmmaker's out there, this actor's out there, go check it out. That's really the reward for us.
I agree. I'd have to say the same thing here on Cinema Jaw. When we get a tweet or an email that says, hey, that was a good recommendation that you guys had there, that's probably the best part of the job.
Except we argue constantly.
Yeah, well, because you don't have any taste in film, man.
Yeah, whatever.
Now, tell us what you've been doing since you left film spotting. I know the fans were crushed. What'd you go to do? Because I know the fans want to hear you back on film spotting in some capacity.
It is actually really, really flattering, all the outpouring that I got. And I had to step away. You know, I would always just say, thank you. But it's Josh and Adam's show now. And I think it brings a different dynamic, and I think it's still as exciting. I love doing it. It was a wonderful experience, but it was time for me to go. I mean, 4 years, and that's kind of the way I looked at it. Like, well, I took 4 years of film school, and now I'm done. And I was trained as an actor. That's what my master's is in. So I had to go out, and I had to actually try it. And I had been putting it off because I was doing film spotting pretty much full time. So I actually went out, and now have been acting, been doing voiceover work, have a movie coming out, actually, hopefully in the fall. It's looks good. It's going to get submitted to a couple festivals. I got cut out of an episode of Mob Doctor. But as long as, if you can pay the bills as an actor, it's great. But I still love film. And what I've been doing is, I have a blog, which of course I'll promote in a little bit. But I've been
Go ahead, promote it now.
Maddie'sBallGame.com, which has been dormant since last February, but the reason is that I'm putting together this whole, actually, best of 2011 and going back to the best of 1971. And so it's going to be really these comprehensive breakdowns of these films, bringing in some really cool people also to talk about it. So I've been doing that behind the scenes. But actually, I am really anal And so until I get it exactly right, I won't put it up there.
We just throw shit at the wall here at Cinema Jaw.
You know,
hope it sticks.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what you got to do. You know, sometimes that's what you got to do. And if you can speak viscerally, I mean, that's as long as you are bringing the truth, mm-hmm. as long as you're bringing the truth. And that's what I always used to say on Film Spotting.
And before we forget, too, what's the name of the film that we're hoping to see in the fall?
The working title right now is Umbrella. It's directed by Samir Butt, who used to be on The Daily Show. He was a Daily Show correspondent, actually, in the Craig Kilborn years. And it's his first feature film. And the cool thing is it's going to be big in Pakistan no matter what, because my co-star in the film, there's just two of us, is a Pakistani soap opera actress.
Whoa.
And she's huge over there. So we're guaranteed to corner the Pakistan market.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. And also, I wanted to ask you, is there any chance that you would do a guest appearance on Film Spotting in the future, or is that just done?
I really want it to be Josh and Adam's show. I want to give Josh a chance, really, really supportive of the show. I hope it takes off. I really do. I hope it gains a major audience, especially on the terrestrial radio waves. So I have removed myself from it. They've asked me to come back a couple times, and I've just politely declined because I want Josh to get that foothold.
Sure.
But definitely. I mean, down the road, I could see coming back doing an episode here or there.
Nice.
You know, and I got to just say, we made the same apology to Adam when he was on. The way we get away with saying we're the greatest movies podcast is the fact that Film Spotting is actually a radio show.
Yes.
So there, we have a lot of love for it, too. It's definitely, we're fans. So.
Hey. It actually did start as a podcast, though. It was actually one of the first podcasts picked up by iTunes. So when it was really in that nascent stage, and that was really what propelled it, because I'm sure what you guys know is it's so hard to build an audience now because there's such a glut of podcasts.
Yeah.
And Film Spotting really, really got lucky because they got in on that initial wave.
For the Jawheads listening to this that are not familiar with Maddie Ballgame and they want to follow you on Twitter, you got a Twitter handle you can plug?
I do. Maddie Ballgame. Go right ahead. Maddie Ballgame.
It's easy to remember, Ryan.
It is. And one more time with the website that's going to be reappearing.
Maddie'sBallgame.com.
Awesome. We got a great guest. He's sitting in on this entire Cinema Jaw. He has his top five favorite movie dads. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
Let's go with MoviePass, Ryan.
Whoa, MoviePass. Unlimited movies in the theater for one low price.
It's seriously one of the best things on earth.
It is, and the best thing is this, Jawheads. Enter the code CINEMAJAW and save $15 on your first month's subscription.
Yeah, it's been called the Netflix of theaters. One price, all the movies you want to see in the theater, unbeatable, and we thank them for their support of CINEMAJAW.
Interested or ignore this week, Matt, is Man of Steel. A young boy learns that he has extraordinary powers and is not of this earth. As a young man, he journeys to discover where he came from and what he was sent here to do. But the hero in him must emerge if he is to save the world from annihilation and become the symbol of hope for all mankind. Wearing the tights and cape this time around is Henry Cavill. Also in the cast is Amy Adams, Michael Shannon, Kevin Costner, and Russell Crowe. The film is directed by Zack Snyder. Matt, interested or ignore on Man of Steel?
Well, I think you know how I feel about superhero films in general, Rye, and this one is not going to break that streak. I'm interested. Looks like an awesome movie. I'll save my comment till after we hear what Maddie thinks.
Maddie Ballgame, interested or ignore on Man of Steel?
When it comes to superhero movies, I'm on board. I think it's really interesting what they're doing now. I mean, back when I saw, what was it called, The Avengers and all the Iron Mans, and what has impressed me is when you have this known commodity, when you have these built-in fan base, you could throw whatever you wanted out there. I mean, people are going to come regardless. So what I am impressed is they're getting A-list talent. They are getting great scriptwriters, great directors. I mean, Christopher Nolan doing this Batman trilogy, that wouldn't have happened in the 80s. It would have been just some hack because you know people are going to come in. So because the money's behind it, I've been actually really impressed with these big Burger King glass movies. And so, yeah, I'm interested.
And I got to join you here. Right. I'm also interested in Man of Steel.
Sure. You've been interested since the beginning of the summer.
I am. But
or
you know,
spring even.
I'm not on board always with these superhero movies because I think it's way too much of the same. We get this a lot when The Hangover 3 comes out. Like, oh, it's the same formula. Like, what's different about the Iron Man series from 1, 2, and 3? It's the same exact thing.
He got new suits in each one, Ryan.
Right. Yeah. So, but the backstory of Superman, we've seen it before. I don't know if it can ever touch the level of Superman the movie. and Superman 2. I still love those films.
Ugh.
But from everything I've seen in the trailer and the way I think they're going for the idea that Clark Kent has got to find the hero inside him, a little bit different than I guess those first two, I'm interested.
Here's the thing I think that is going to be the telltale sign of whether or not this new, let's call it the Warner series, is going to be as cool as what they've been doing with Marvel and the Avengers and Iron Man and all that. Are they going to have something after the credits? Are we going to see Lex Luthor or Metallo or somebody after the credits? I mean, if they don't do that, they don't know what they're doing, because they've got to compete with what Disney's doing with Marvel. That's my two cents. It's going to make or break the trilogy.
Well, and that's where your comment comes in, is that it is formulaic.
Right.
You know, and of course, you've got to put that teaser in at the end. That's just one part of the little catch that they have to throw in. I'm curious as well, because my Superman is always going to be Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. And that first film, just from the score to Gene Hackman chewing the scenery to Marlon Brando not knowing what movie he's in, that for me is the fun, because it's still kind of messy. Whereas what they did, that what do they call it, a reboot?
Yeah, Superman Returns.
You didn't like it?
Oh, it's terrible.
Really? I liked it a lot.
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry, man. I really dug it.
And the other thing, too, is I am going to argue this later in the show, too, but that Superman, the movie, when it came out, it was the perfect timing as far as where we were technology-wise with movies. It just captured the idea of seeing man fly on screen. That was something a spectacle at the time. And nowadays, that's old hat. We don't aren't amazed by the special effects anymore.
Well, and that's a great point, because even in something like the Avengers, there are just these action scenes that are really, you know, indecipherable. I don't know what's going on. I know it's fast and, wow, look at those explosions. But there's something to looking that, I mean, something like Star Wars, when you didn't have the technology. Well, you saw that these people are struggling. Through conflict comes great art. You find a way to do it, and there's just something tangible about it. Like, you could touch those people. And so I think that's what gets washed away a lot of the time. But let me put in a big thing. Michael Shannon's going to be in this film.
Big fan.
Great Chicago actor. Great Chicago actor. And I'm again, goes to my point that they are going out there and finding amazing talent.
Yeah, I talk about Michael Shannon a lot on the show. He's one of my favorite new actors anyway. He's been around for a while, but he's really sprung up. And I think this movie's just going to push him into that superstar sphere.
Not to beat this dead horse Superman movie coming out, but I'll say this is my final point here. Just because the technology has advanced and these effects are possible doesn't make them easy. I mean, yeah, it's all done in computers now, but that stuff takes hours and hours of meticulous work. So you got to give credit, even though the effects are a lot more possible.
True.
Doesn't make them easy.
True. Three strong interesteds for Man of Steel here from CinemaJaw. And Kevin Costner is in this movie. I threw this out on Twitter, and I wanted to ask you guys as well. Do you have a favorite Kevin Costner movie that jumps into your head? What about you, Maddie Ballgame?
Well, you know, I actually went to school with Kevin Costner's daughter, so I got the chance to meet him. And I know his reputation, because he hasn't made the great film choices in the latter part of his career, but one of the nicest guys you would ever meet, really humble, really down to earth. My number one has to be Bull Durham. I mean, there's just no other movie for me.
I love it as well. Big fan of Bull Durham. How about you, Matt?
I considered Bull Durham, but to be honest, to bring the truth, as Maddie said, I've got to go with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh my God.
Hey.
That barely gets a bell, Matt. That barely gets a bell.
I just said it's my favorite. You know, I mean, Field of Dreams, maybe, but that one is just too...
How long does this podcast go?
Yeah. Welcome. Welcome, sir.
Oh, boy. I go with his big epic, the Academy Award winning Dances with Wolves. Soft spot, always in my heart for Dances with Wolves. I was just coming into my own as like really appreciating film at that age when I saw Dances with Wolves, and I was just totally blown away by it. And then ever since then, I thought, wow, it's Kevin Costner. He directed this movie. He stars in it. And then, of course, it was just soon after that he started to make these poor choices.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous film.
It's so beautiful to look at.
Absolutely gorgeous. And, I mean, that Buffalo Hunt scene is fantastic. It never should have beaten out Goodfellas for Best Picture that year. But unfortunately, what that sort of put in his brain is, now I can make Dances with Wolves in every single genre. So I'm going to go on and make Waterworld, which, hey, is fun, you know, for what it is. But then he's going to...
I like that one, too.
I like Waterworld. But then to go on and do something like The Post... Postman, which is just irredeemable.
Right.
So
Now we threw this out to Twitter. Matt, did we get any responses?
Oh, yeah. We sure did, Rye. Let's see. At LE1981 said, seriously, it's No Way Out. But as a typical girl, The Bodyguard has had the most repeat viewings.
Oh, The Bodyguard.
Oh, No Way Out. Oh, that's a great little film.
I have never seen it. I've seen parts of it on TV, and I've never sat down and watched it.
Fantastic little tight thriller. Oh, that's a great choice. A great choice.
Let's see. Jonathan Clancy, who is at LAGE1984, no relation to LE1981, said, The Postman, Maddie, because it delivers. Ba-doom. <Ba-dum-psh. laughs> First-time watchers on Twitter said, Open Range, yeah, well-deserved. Open Range, one of the best and most underrated westerns of the last 10 years. Sublime cinematography with understated performances by the leads.
I liked Open Range. I wasn't blown away by it. I'm not a huge western fan, but I appreciate it.
Well, it's a completely different film than Tombstone, which came out around the same time. And again, it is kind of this epic. It's a little bit slower moving. It's not as compact. There's some interesting things about it. It is a beautiful film.
It's Dances with Wolves in the Old West.
Exactly.
That. Yeah. Let's see. Rodney Stone, who is at Jair, J-A-I-R-O-B, on Twitter, says, toss up between Untouchables and Field of Dreams. Classic flicks for me. Hopefully it will be Man of Steel after next week.
Well, Untouchables, I mean, a great David Mamet written film. I mean, it's a really fun film.
Shot here in Chicago.
Actually, just a block from my house. Uh-huh. I can walk down there, see the set. And yeah, no, it is a timeless film. And Field of Dreams, gorgeous film. Again, I mean, it just touches your heart every single time.
I love it.
You can't help but bawl every single time at it. But as far as baseball movies, I'm just going to forget that he made The Perfect Game. Bull Durham, for me, speaks more to what really goes on in baseball.
Let's see. We can't not mention Jeff Phillips, who is at the Igloo Oven, one of Elias's buddies from Wood Sugars, says Waterworld because he finally got to show off how good he is at holding his breath. AB said, Costner and Mr. Brooks. I was shocked at how brilliantly he played the serial fingerprint killer. Changed my view of him. I've never seen that one.
I've stayed away from it also. I heard such mixed things.
Actually, I mean, Mr. Brooks, ultimately, it's not not a great film, but I was surprised by it. I went into it with absolutely no expectation. I could see what they're going for. I don't know if it quite delivers, but yeah, it's, again, a nice little thriller and sort of him out of his comfort zone. Something like No Way Out as well. Of course, we all know the likable Kevin Costner. And here, I think he's trying to resurrect his career a lot like Jim Carrey did with some of those darker films he tried to do. Ultimately, like I said, I don't think it really works, but it's an entertaining film.
I'm excited to see Jim Carrey in the Kick-Ass sequel. All right, let's see. We've got a couple more here. Darth G007 said, Crash Davis because Bull Durham is fantastic and Crash is a badass name. No arguments from this panel, I would imagine.
No doubt.
Mark Herney said, The Untouchables. Another one, vote for Untouchables. Frank Needy, I said your friend died screaming like a stuck Irish pig. Ness, did he sound anything like that? That's a famous scene. And then finally, Books Not Wook said, the one where he's in the water world. I don't remember the title.
Oh, you got to love the Jawheads comedy here, Matt. If you're listening to this and we missed one of your Kevin Costner favorites and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I did catch Before Midnight. The third installment in the Before series is the best movie 2013 has seen so far. 18 years since we first met them. We are reunited with Jesse and Celine. This time around, the two of them and their daughters are on vacation in Greece. As with the first two films in the series, Before Midnight is filled with rich conversation and interesting ideas. The characters and the dialogue are as authentic as I have seen ever portrayed in film. The acting poured in by Ethan Hawke and Julia Delpy is phenomenal and should be recognized come Oscar time. It's refreshing to see a movie about adults, for adults, with no crazy plot twists or massive explosions. The magic here is the chemistry between Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. The problems the characters face are rooted in reality, problems many people can relate to. This is a must-see film. Ride the Movie Guys grade a perfect 4 Jaws.
So this is the story of how he got his superpowers, right?
Of course it is.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm excited for this.
And you know what's interesting, too? Have you seen the first two Before movies?
Of course, of course.
This third one, I watched it, and then I went home, and I own the first two, so I put the first one on, and I thought it would be interesting if somebody has not seen the Before movies. You could actually go see the third one. It's a standalone film. They give you enough information on how they met, and then you could go back and almost have these prequels that were made 18 years ago.
I think that's important. You know, I think that's part of the reason why the Iron Man 3 movie was such a disappointment. It does not stand on its own. You need to have that in a trilogy, a series.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, and I don't know if Before Midnight, if it resembles the filmmaking of the first two. I'm assuming
it does. Yes.
But it, again, it harkens back to that great age of 60s and 70s film where these are people just having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And you are enthralled.
Right.
And it's just this sort of emotional catharsis because there's it's so truthful and you can latch on to so much. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's actually once they start walking and the camera starts following them along, you just get a smile on your face because this is what we've come to expect out of these two. It was a total blast. Definitely Jawheads. Four Jaws for Before Midnight. The other one I caught, Matt, is Francis Ha. Watching the latest film from Noah Baumbach, you can't help but be reminded of Woody Allen's 1979 masterpiece, Manhattan. Both are shot in black and white, and both romanticize New York City better than most films shot there. The title character, Frances, is played perfectly awkward by Greta Gerwig. She carries the film and deserves all the credit for its success. She is 27 and still trying to figure out her life. She lives with a roommate while trying to become a dancer and hitting parties at night. When her best friend's life starts to change, Frances feels she is being left behind. There are plenty of funny conversations and ideas expressed throughout the movie. Gerwig brings some heart to the character, but the film as a whole lacks emotion. Still, this is a quality alternative to the big summer blockbusters. I recommend this one highly as well. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws for Frances Ha.
Well, I love Noah Baumbach. I'm a huge Squid and the Whale fan.
As am I.
And always sort of pushing the envelope with what he does. I could kind of see that. There's always kind of a shallowness to these characters a little bit. That's kind of a, I don't know, faint criticism or maybe doesn't hold true because they are captivating and they are based in, you know, these people, but you don't necessarily like them, which can kind of put you at, you know, arm's length. But Greta Gerwig is an amazing talent, and I'm so glad that she got discovered because she actually worked here in Chicago on a couple films and, you know, low budget small films, and she is, people remember her from that Ben Stiller film, I forget what it was.
That was also a Baumbach. That was Greenberg.
Was it Greenberg?
Yes.
Yeah, that was Baumbach as well. Yeah. So obviously he certainly has an eye for talent.
Yeah, and she was great in Damsels in Distress. I don't know if you've seen that, and this one really showcases her talent. I mean, this is going to elevate her career hugely. Baumbach had a couple misses there with Greenberg and also Margot at the Wedding, and this one's probably his strongest since The Squid and the Whale, so I think you'll love it.
Great.
3.5 Jaws for Frances Ha. No main father figure in there, even though Jesse in Before Midnight is a really good father. He's divorced now because he is with Celine, and he also has two daughters with her.
You're just blowing the whole movie.
No. This is told in 2 minutes into the movie. But that is our topic, Matt, our top five favorite movie dads, and you're getting us started this week.
All right. You know, at number five, I have a pick that I feel could be a number one. I really do. So I'm coming out strong. Cliff Worley, as played by Dennis Hopper in True Romance.
Great pick.
Nice pick, Matt.
Now, here's a dad that will do anything for his son, including telling the most insulting story about the Sicilian people imaginable to a bunch of Sicilian mobsters who are ready to kill him.
Christopher Walken, how do you get away with that?
Oh, man. You know, it's rare that somebody can completely steal a scene from Christopher Walken. And Dennis Hopper, honestly, I think this is probably, outside of his really early work, probably my favorite 5 minutes of Dennis Hopper. I say, every once in a while, I'll just pull it up on YouTube.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that he's stealing the scene so much from Christopher Walken. It's just a beautiful scene to watch.
Yeah.
I've watched it many a times after a couple of cocktails. I'm like, oh, you got to put on that scene because it's just so much fun.
Two heavyweights going at it, just having so much fun. And what's hilarious about that scene is that you actually see it's completely unnecessary because you go ahead and, I'm not going to give it away, but you know what he finds out right afterwards is, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even need to go through that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the best things. As a dad, he would, you know, do what he did, sacrifice.
Yeah, ends of the earth.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Great pick, Matt. My number five is actually a sad movie that, let's just say, I'm not a huge fan of, but when I saw it, for some reason, when we said Best Dads, it's that kind of pick that just sort of jumped at me. And I'm speaking of Bob Jones, played by Michael Keaton in My Life.
Not going another direction with Keaton.
Huh? No, okay. I know. Are you familiar with My Life?
Not a perfect film, but one of my girlfriend's favorites in high school. And we would watch it all the time, actually. And it is
all
a lovely
time. That's a sad movie to watch all the time.
I'm telling you, but this is what it was, that and Four Weddings and a Funeral. So, but no, it is a really, really beautiful film. And Michael Keaton, I just don't know what happened. He should have Tom Hanks's career.
I agree.
He's just an absolutely brilliant actor, but one of my favorites.
He is coming back a little bit. He was great in like The Other Guys. He had some small supporting roles that really highlight his talents. But
he was in Cars. I mean, that's a pretty big voice work. I mean, you know.
In this movie, My Life, he plays Bob, who learns that he's dying of kidney cancer right when his wife, played by Nicole Kidman, is pregnant. And basically, he then takes a video to explain to his kid, unborn kid, how to shave, how to play basketball, these kind of things. It's a real tearjerker.
Oh, man. Yeah, you got me just by that description.
It is. And I mean, it does feel a little bit manipulative. So that's where I think I kind of detract from it now, going back and watching it. But yeah, I mean, it is. Nicole Kidman plays his wife, and it's a really solid film.
Yeah. That was my number five. We swing it over to Maddie Ballgame. What do you got sitting there?
Well, I'll be taking these Huggies. I'm going with High from Raising Arizona, Nicolas Cage. Just that performance, it's to me, it's hilarious. Here's a guy, talk about going to the ends of the earth, which is really where, I mean, his seed can find no purchase. And so to do anything for his wife, he kidnaps his baby and... of course, he loses them to gangsters, but you know, neither here nor there. That performance for me, that movie for me, just registers. I mean, one of the first movies I saw as a kid that I was like, oh, this is what great cinema is.
And it's a reminder too, as we get more and more crap from Nick Cage, that he did do good work at one time.
Oh, yeah. I've been on a Nick Cage kick, actually, recently. There was a couple, what is it? Red Rock, Wyoming? Red Rock, whatever that is. It's a nice little film. But I just watched...
Throw it in the jaw box. He looks everything up after the break.
Nice, nice. I just watched The Wicker Man, however. Ooh. A remake of the 1972 classic, which a cult classic. And Neil LaBute directed it in The Company of Men. He always kind of pushes the envelope. One of the worst films, I hate to say it, I never say this kind of thing, one of the worst films I have ever seen.
Wow, the foolish Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Nice pick with Raising Arizona, though. Matt, we're into our fours. What do you got?
At number four, I have, you know, again, maybe I picked this one too often here, but it's The Old Man from A Christmas Story, Darren McGavin. I mean, it's probably a pretty obvious choice, but... We all watch this movie probably once a year. I know I do.
In high school, we had to watch it in high school. It's like they put it on for 2 hours. Like the teachers are done having their mimosas at that point. So
yeah, it's definitely the teacher has a hangover kind of movie.
Yeah.
And you know what? I can take it every time. I've seen it probably more than just about any other film, and I love it every time. And The Old Man, he's a classic dad. You know, he's always pissed off. But in the end, I think he comes through for Ralphie with that Red Ryder BB gun. So.
Sure does.
It's a good parent.
It's a great pick.
Nice
great pick.
And I actually go pretty strong with my number four. Boy, oh boy. Sean Connery as Professor Henry Jones in The Last Crusade.
Well done.
I mean, when you were thinking we were going to meet Indiana Jones's father, I thought the whole thing sounded corny, but I thought they played it off beautifully on screen.
He did. I just, what did he really do for his son, though? I mean, growing up, he was a non-presence, wasn't he?
He was. I guess so. He was a bad parent there. But
he led him to the Holy Grail.
He did.
Literally.
He did.
So you got that going for him. And then who doesn't love the ending of that film when they're going for the Ark? The way they set it up so perfectly. And he tells him, Indiana, let it go.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love it. Sean Connery, too. I sort of missed him as I was doing the research for this. God, I used to love a good Sean Connery, but...
Well, he's 160 years old
I
now.
Know.
Well, and that's the thing. They told me that he turned down, what is that wizard film? The Hobbits, the Gandalf. He turned that down, the original series.
Really?
Oh, that could just be a rumor, but someone told me that he turned it down. I mean, he's got all the money in the world. I think he's like, I'm too old.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
That was my number four, Professor Henry Jones. We swing it over to Maddie Ballgames.
I'm going with Spencer Tracy and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. just, I mean, the movie, of nice course, if you pick. Haven't seen it, you have to. Of course, it's Sidney Poitier and Katharine Hepburn. And, I mean, the boundaries that it crosses, I mean, was revolutionary for the late 60s, even as late as then. And his last monologue, when he's basically dying. Spencer Tracy himself is basically dying at this point. He does this last monologue that is absolutely cinema gold. I mean, it's just one of, you talk about, you know, getting your heartstrings without being manipulative. I mean, this is, if you haven't seen it, you have to see Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
I agree. I that was one of those that I caught way after the fact, you know, as I was going over some of the classics I hadn't seen. It totally blew me away.
I've seen it, but I think I was a child. I definitely saw it way too early to actually appreciate it.
Nice pick. Look at how Maddie Ballgame is classing up the joint here, Matt.
He's bringing it.
We're into our threes. What do you got, Matt?
Well, see, now I'm gonna bring a classy one. This is Roberto Benigni's role as Guido from Life is Beautiful.
And also on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I go too low
right
with this
one? No, right there
one?
Also. Right
oh,
there
really?
Also. Yep.
Oh,
okay,
perfect.
Guys. Okay. All right. When it came out, everybody was adored it. Look at this character. He's wonderful. But when you go back and watch that film, and it, to me, it's just ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Is it? Well.
It's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What are we downplaying the Holocaust? It's a fun film. But it's
well, it's not exactly a fun film.
No, but it is. I mean, and just, you know, I can see what it's going for. And when I first saw it, I was captivated. But going back and looking at it,
you think it's too far-fetched?
Well, I just think it's just kind of silly and doesn't rise to the occasion that it should.
Yeah, but again, you got to remember.
I don't know if I can get on that side.
Hey, go back and watch it.
I will say I have only seen it one time. But I will say that you're supposed to be seeing this almost through. We're not seeing it through the kid's eyes, but again, he's only trying to fool however old his son is supposed to be,
5 years
old. So, yeah, it may come off as silly and we're downplaying the Holocaust, but all he's trying to do is protect his son. And in that regards, I still think
he's a great dad. And that's the way I looked at this top five list, is even if I didn't really admire the film that much, you're right, he is a great father.
That was my number three as well. We're right on the same page.
That is rare that this happens.
It sure is. We'll swing it over to Maddie Ballgame. What do you got sitting at number three?
Well, my number three is Dustin Hoffman as Ted Kramer in Kramer versus Kramer.
He stole my number one.
Oh, man. Wow. I mean, again, talk about just an amazing monologue here. I mean, I've done it before in auditions, and here's a guy that is – You all see it. You know, the court sides with him being with his mother, who is distressed, and he is fighting the system, and you're screaming out, why can't you see that this is the dad? He should be with the dad. And unfortunately, there's these events that get blown out of proportion. But again, I mean, both my dads so far have had great monologues at the end of end of their film. And yeah, Kramer versus Kramer, of course, he won the Oscar for it.
He did. And I wanted to mention it as two extremely memorable scenes. Of course, when he's first making breakfast for his son right after Meryl Streep has left him. And then also when the kid falls in the playground and Dustin Hoffman picks him up and is running to the hospital through the streets. Ah. It hits you right in the heart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, the consequences that fall out from that, you're again, I'm yelling. I'm like, no, you don't understand what happened.
Yep. Great pick. Yeah. Matt, we're into our number twos.
All right. Here we go. My number two, you knew this was going to be on my list, Ryan. You knew this as soon as you had the idea for this topic. Clark W. Griswold.
My number one.
Really?
Nice. Yeah.
See, there you go. I mean, after all, this is Chicago, right? We all have a soft spot in our hearts for the Griswolds in general. Chevy Chase immortalized this character, probably best portrayed in the original Vacation movie. I also really like Christmas Vacation. I'm sure we all do. What can you say, man? And this movie's fantastic.
Well, no, it is. And Chevy Chase was a star for a reason. I mean, he's a joke. He's a jerk now. And he really is. But he was a star for a reason, and Vacation was what really literally put him on the map. There's a pun. But he is the reason I love it is because it speaks to my dad, just a dorky dad, but who loves his family so much. And we would do those road trips. And I remember like driving into a new state. My dad would always say,
welcome to the great state of Indiana. And I mean, and the thing is, the reason I love it is I'm headed the same way. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, that is actually one of my life goals. I'd be completely happy with my life if I'd become Clark Griswold.
Yes.
I'm halfway there, dude. I'm getting there.
Nice pick, Matt. At my number two, I go with the classic Atticus Finch, played by Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, come
it's
on.
It's a great pick. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
talk
yeah.
Talk about a role model, right? You got this guy who's going to court, fighting for what's right, and still he comes home and he hangs out with Scout and Jem and teaches them the right morals in life. I love Atticus Finch. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't love him? I know, but you're exactly right. All he does is he's an intimidating guy. I respect him, but all he does is teach you the right thing to do all the time. And it's like, okay, this is not a guy I can go down and, you know, have a rum runner with on the tiki bar beach. And I was talking to my parents. I was home over, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, and they said to me, you know, when we die, you're not getting any money. We're blowing it all. And so I just don't think Atticus Finch would ever do that. Just lighten up. I mean, there's got to be some hedonism in it. But yeah, of course, Atticus Finch, wonderful.
Yeah, and maybe if there was a new To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch would be a little bit more laid back because it's modern day. But at the time, when we're looking at what year did this come out, 1962, I think he played it perfectly.
Well, still the 50s, really, in 1962.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously the film is a great adaptation. I mean, on par with the book, and of course dealing with all the issues that they are. I mean, no, I can't disparage it. Just personally, though, as a dad, I would be really bored.
So that was my number two. Matty Ballgame, what do you got sitting there?
My number two is, okay, this is a cheat, but it was a film, all right? It was a film, and that is the stand-up comedy version of Bill Cosby himself. Came out in the early 80s. It was a film, and everybody remembers the great bits from it.
Oh, yeah, classic comedy.
Dad is great. We're making the chocolate cake. And it is all about fatherhood. And so that's why I thought it had to be on the list. And I was reticent to put it on there because, yes, it is a stand-up comedy film, but it is a film you could easily then go into. This is exactly what happened on The Huxtables, the Bill Cosby show. To me, I could watch that late night anytime, just turn it on and just feel good about yourself.
Man, I haven't seen himself in a long, long time.
And Bill Cosby, I was going to say, is one of those guys out there. He's almost like a Michael J. Fox. Nobody can not like that guy.
No.
Yeah, and he's a quintessential dad too. I mean, obviously most notable on his TV roles, but I mean, even it's a crappy throwaway movie, but Ghost Dad, you know, it's worth coming up on a Father's Day list. At least as a semi-honorable mention.
I think the only person that hates Bill Cosby is Eddie Murphy.
That's probably true.
No, I mean, he's on record, basically. Yeah.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number two?
No, that my number two.
Oh, I'm sorry,
your
number one.
We're at number
ones. Ones.
All right, at number one, yeah, I'm shocked that neither of you guys had this because both of your number ones have been taken, right? Or a role so big, it took three men to bring it to the screen.
Oh, don't go there.
David Prowse, Bob Anderson, and of course, James Earl Jones. I'm talking about Darth Vader.
Are you kidding me?
Really?
Really?
Really? You don't like that pick?
Well, it's better where I thought you were going. When I heard three men to fill the role, I thought you were going three men and a baby.
No, Jesus.
Tom, who doesn't want Steve Guttenberg as a dad?
Give me a little credit here. I do like Mahoney, but...
All right, well, listen to me. Don't listen to me. I want to hear, why is Darth Vader a good father?
Why is he a good father? Well, we all know why he's a bad father, right? All the things he did. But ultimately, in the end, he atones for it, doesn't he? I mean, he picks up the Emperor when Luke is definitely at his end. You know, he's getting the Force lightning right in the face. He picks him up and he throws him down the shaft to his apparent doom. We're going to find out in the sequels. But
no, his apparent doom.
His apparent. Stress the apparent doom.
No, doom.
You think he died? Yeah. I say Palpatine lived, but that's for another show. Darth Vader atones for his sins, and he returns to the light side, and you know we see him as Hayden Christensen in the remake, retouched movies.
Whatever those things were.
Right. At the end of Return of the Jedi, he's there. I mean, he was the savior for the entire galaxy.
If we were going iconic fathers, I would have gave that to you.
Yeah.
But best dad, I don't know if he's the best dad.
No, Ben Kenobi would actually be the best father figure from the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, when you say father and you say movies, it's hard to not think immediately Darth Vader. So that's why he's on my list. Is he the best parent? No, of course not. He sucked as a parent. But he's an epic dad.
All right. We'll let it sit there at number one. Let us know what you guys think, Jawheads, of Matt's number one. It's better than the Hanks's last
week. Yeah, definitely better than last week's.
As stated, I had my number one also was Ted Kramer, played by Dustin Hoffman. To fill one in here, an honorable mention I did want to talk about was Michael Keaton in his other great father role, Mr. Mom.
There you go.
I love this movie. Growing up, this was a huge hit in the family. Hilarious. And again, Michael Keaton back then could do no wrong.
I already made this comparison. It's like he could have had Tom Hanks's career. And mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't get appreciated that way, because he could do Mr. Mom. He did Gung Ho. But then he could also do something like Batman.
Right.
And for me,
he's got a lot of range. Yeah,
yeah, for me, he is Batman. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely great pick and a great Terry Garr film as well.
Yes, absolutely.
How often can we say that?
I was going to say that's a short list.
And Matty Ballgame, what do you got sitting at number one?
Well, my number one was taken as Clark Griswold, but I'll throw one in.
Sure.
I'll throw in an honorable mention just because I'm so taken with these films.
Oh,
and
nice.
That's Liam Neeson from Taken. Just because
they
are the most ridiculous things in the world, but oh my God, I would love to have Liam Neeson as my dad. When I go to the grocery store and I've watched Taken, like I speak to the clerk. Like you are going to give me 2 packs of gum. This is what you're going to do. To me, it's just the most ridiculous fare in the world, but I just think it's hilarious and a great watch. I mean, it really is.
And a minor issue I have with these, but I like to have fun with them too. This is one of those films where they never say kidnapped for some reason, right? The daughter's gone. The most common thing you would say is she's been kidnapped, but
she's been taken.
She's taken.
She's taken.
Taken. They constantly say it. What happened to your daughter? She's been taken.
Yeah. Well, that's where I refer to him. I don't even know his character's name. His name is Taken for me. I really think Taken would be the first Bond villain to actually win a movie. You don't mess with Taken. He took out in Taken 2. He took out the most interesting man in the world with, you know, from the Dos Equis commercials.
Right.
You can do that. I mean, come on.
I mean, maybe we got an idea, a crossover here. Maybe Bond falls in love with his daughter and takes Taken's daughter, and then he becomes a Bond villain.
Yeah, because he knows who Bond is,
yes.
And he doesn't want to expose his daughter to that.
Right. I like it. Matt, you got an honorable mention?
I do. You know, let's see. There's a couple here. We're missing Marlin the Clownfish, Albert Brooks.
Great pick. One of my honorable mentions, yep.
And Father of the Bride, you can go with Steve Martin or the original...
Spencer Tracy.
Thank you, right. Spencer Tracy. And here's another good one, man. Richard Hoover is played by Greg Kinnear from Little Miss Sunshine.
I did like him in there.
I like that pick.
He was a great dad. He went to the ends of the earth. What about Jack Burns from Meet the Parents, Robert De Niro's character?
Not bad. I think a little overhyped, but that's just me.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
Yeah, again, not a really likable dad, mm-hmm. per se. You know.
That's all I got.
I got a couple. What about Charles Bronson from Death Wish?
There you go.
Bruce Willis, nice. Along the same lines, Bruce Willis and Die Hard. Or, you know, I kind of got into the stream here, Mel Gibson and Mad Max. But also, I didn't like the film, but I like Will Smith in Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that one deserves to be on the list.
Yeah, exactly. But you took my Finding Nemo. I think Nemo might be up there with the Toy Stories as my favorite Pixar film.
I agree.
I'm a huge fan as well. Jawheads, if you're listening to this and we missed your favorite movie dad, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have trivia, Superman movie trivia.
Nice. I might actually win one for a change.
You've got me already.
Plus, we have a new CinemaJaw riddle. Last week's been answered. We have a new one to give out.
Sweet.
Plus, a Cinema War looking at who is the best Lois Lane. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. In 1991's Father of the Bride, among the wedding gifts received by Annie is a Venus de Milo statue with a clock in the stomach. In the original Father of the Bride, Elizabeth Taylor's Kay also receives this as one of her wedding gifts. Both look at it with disdain. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
We are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Matty Ballgame, formerly of Film Spotting, and about to be a big-name actor, are you not?
Oh, yeah. Count on it.
We sure are. That way we can say we had Manny Ballgame on when he was just an up-and-comer. Matt, I know we threw an item or two into the Jaw box, but before we get there, a new segment we introduced on the last Jaw was this new Cinema Jaw riddle.
That's right, yeah.
And we had a few responses. Three of them were incorrect, but one did come in correct. The winner of last week's riddle, which the answer was Mark Ruffalo. And if you'll remember the clues, they were Tom Cruise shot me dead. That was from Collateral. A lesbian's fallen in love with me. That was from The Kids Are All Right. I Danced in My Underwear, you may not remember, was from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Jeremy Boyd, at Jeremy underscore Boyd, answered that correctly, and he wrote in this week's riddle.
Oh, I can't wait to add the echo effect right here.
No doubt. Jawheads, if you know the answer to this riddle, be the first to respond, and you will win a free Redbox rental, and you get to write next week's riddle. Here it is, Matt. I have taken a shot to the heart. Fell in love with an imperfect man and have been buried alive. Who am I? Oh boy, nice. It's a good one from Jeremy Boyd. You already got an idea who that is, Matt?
I think I have an idea.
Jawheads, be the first, and you will win a free Redbox rental and also get to write next week's clue. We threw an item into the Jaw box, and I know Elias is stuffed down there.
It's Father's Day. He's got a dad. We should let him out. It has nothing to do with anything, but...
Let's open up that box.
Open him up.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
What is going on, fellas? Yes, it is Father's Day, and I really enjoy your topic today of the good fathers. It reminds me of whenever Matt kicks the box and yells, "Who's your daddy?" It's in the middle of the night when I'm just sleeping in here. He does it, like, just constantly. Okay, so we were trying to look for that Nicolas Cage movie. It was the 1993 Red Rock West.
With Dennis Hopper.
There we go.
And J.T. Walsh.
See how it all ties back into Dennis Hopper, Matt?
It all comes full circle.
Was that the only item we threw in there?
That actually was, unless I forgot.
Beautiful. Okay. Get back in that box, then.
All right. See you later.
Thank you. All right, Matt, it brings us to a segment we call...
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Maddie Ballgame, gets to play judge and jury and decide who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's very important because we are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, we have a new Superman coming out, Man of Steel, so we thought we would look at Lois Lane. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, can Amy Adams fill the shoes of Margot Kidder and be a perfect Lois Lane, or is Kidder in a class of her own? Matt, you'll be fighting for Amy Adams can be better than a better Lois Lane. Rye, you'll be fighting that Margot Kidder is in a class of her own. Let the Cinema War begin.
Rye, the only class Margot Kidder is in is traffic school after all her DUIs. She was in Superman and a few horror films, but you can't sit there and tell me that she's a superb actress. Who will be the better Lois Lane? It's going to be Amy Adams.
No, 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 Maddie. Margot Kidder is Lois Lane. Christopher Reeve is Superman. That is just the way of it. Some things are so perfect that even Hollywood, with all their money, can't replicate the magic of the original.
I know you love those classics, but here's the thing. I also know that you loved Amy Adams in Julie and Julia, and I fell in love with her after The Muppets. Let's talk about range. She's able to play cheerful or sarcastic comedian roles, and also truly dramatic turns like in The Fighter as well. She has a comedic timing to be the quirky Lois Lane and the dramatic chops to add some much-needed flesh to the paper-thin character left by Margot Kidder.
Oh, come on, Matt. Lois Lane needs to be feisty and needs to be a strong female character. I think Amy Adams can pull that off. But Lois also needs to be naive and have that uncanny ability to get into trouble. Kidder balanced both of these aspects perfectly, and that's why we fell in love with her.
All right, I know I might be stuck on the filmography here, but I forgot to mention The Master and Sunshine Cleaning. There's just a higher level of professionalism here, not some whack job sleeping on somebody's front lawn. If the debate was who is more likely to be doing Comic-Con appearances to pay for a drug habit, then we'd know who won.
Tough, tough crowd, man. Boy, I didn't know you had such disdain for Margot Kidder. Wow. Although Kidder had worked for many years on different TV projects, she was a bit of an unknown in the film world when she appeared as Lois Lane circa 1978. Amy Adams, meanwhile, has been in the movie fans' eyes for 10 plus years. Look at all the movies you've mentioned. To her, it's just another role, and because of that, it will not be memorable.
No, it's going to be the role of her lifetime. And this argument is just plain laughable. Margot Kidder was a serviceable actress who survived mostly on her looks, while Amy Adams has actual marketable range in her ability as an actress, and the good looks is just an added benefit. She will outshine as Lois in every imaginable way.
Matt, the first two Superman films are still some of the best in the superhero genre. Much of that has to do with the outstanding cast. It also has to do with timing. Special effects were at a point that seeing Superman fly on screen was part of the fun. It was magical. Margot Kidder's Lois Lane and Superman falling in love was just as magical, and a formula that all superhero films follow to this day. Kidder's Lois Lane is in a league of her own and can never be touched. Whew. Wow.
Wow.
We are throwing kryptonite at each other here on Cinema War. We throw it to our guest. He plays judge and jury. Matty Ballgame, what'd you think of this Cinema War?
Oh, I'm sorry. Matt wins this one hands down.
No! That easily?
Look, you can't, you know, the sins of Margot Kidder, what she did afterwards, you can't hold against her. But at that same time, Amy Adams is one of the most brilliant talents out there working right now. I completely forgot she was in Catch Me If You Can, a cute little film that Tom Hanks filmed,
that's great.
Steven Spielberg. And, of course, she was in Junebug. I mean, one of the most fantastic performances I've seen of the 2000s. So, no, hands down, Amy Adams. I think your argument is that she's going to kind of go through the motions. But you were looking for someone who can play naive and also feisty. She's the perfect pick for that.
Boy, oh boy.
I got to agree. You know, the only thing I would have gone is she doesn't look like a Lois Lane to me. Like, she doesn't have that raven hair. I always thought of Lois as a brunette, so I don't know.
Two things I learned just now. Matt, you absolutely hate Margot Kidder. And Matty Ballgame is in love with Amy Adams. It's a lose-lose for me here today.
Yeah. No, and Margot Kidder's wonderful. We were in rehab together, so I can speak to her personality.
She's really turned it around now.
Matt, it's been a while since you won on Cinema War, but that earns you 20 seconds to rant and rave on whatever you want. So, hit it.
All right, here we go. I wasn't expecting to win, so I have nothing prepared, Rye, but I will say this. Let's all get out there and check out this new Superman film. I know a lot of us are weary of all the superhero flicks that are coming out, but this one does look a cut above. I think it's going to be better than Iron Man 3, mark my words. So I'll see you at the movies, I guess. I don't know.
That was pretty easy. And you did another 20 seconds.
See, it's the economy of time there, Rye. That's wonderful. What I was going for. Brevity.
Before we get to Superman movie trivia, we have one quick DVD review, Matt. You caught Warm Bodies in the theater. It is coming out on DVD, or I should say it is out on DVD. Give us a quick review.
Yeah, I just rented it, Rye, and I like it as much as I did when I saw it in the theater. I think it's a really interesting zombie spin on Romeo and Juliet, and I'm an idiot. The first time I saw this, I didn't pick up on the Romeo and Juliet thing till like halfway through. I'm like, oh. It's fun to see John Malkovich do his little cameo, but the star here is Nicholas Holt as R, the zombie with a heart, if you will. The thing about it is, I love zombie movies. I'm actually probably the only person here excited for World War Z. When I saw this, I guess I wasn't expecting... Thank you. I wasn't expecting too much out of it, and I was pleasantly surprised that this film actually delivers on a lot of levels. It's funny, there's some decent gore, some good zombie action, and it's truly an original. I would put it up there with Shaun of the Dead as far as zombie movies in general go, and as movies, you know, period.
How many Jaws?
I'm going to stick with my original 3-jaw rating on this. Totally worth a spin. 3 out of 4 Jaws, especially if you like zombie films. This is one to not miss.
So he has a heart, but does he have brains?
Well, that's part of it. Actually, you know what? I don't want to spoil anything here, but the way they treat the brain eating in this is very original. It's one of the things I like the best about it. I guess I'm not giving anything away by saying when they eat the brains, that's kind of how they feel alive. They kind of absorb the memory of the person whose brain they're eating. And that's how he kind of gets to know his love interest a little better, because very early on in the film, he gets one of her boyfriends. So He has the inside track on her.
So the title is Warm Bodies.
Warm Bodies.
Right, check it out.
Nice worth
pick.
Seeing.
Nice pick, Matt. Brings us to trivia. We play it every week here on Cinema Jaw. This week it is Maddie Ballgame against Matt K in Superman movie trivia.
Oh, can't we do Bergman films? I have no idea.
Now just think everything Superman. Different cast members that have been in Superman.
Richard Pryor.
All right. Yeah, he might pop up. Now, you're our guest this week. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get stuck on one, you get one rescue. Our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, you get one trip to the ER, and he'll help you out with a clue.
I love it. No, I've got a pass. I got a pass. You can go first, Matt.
Wow. Okay. And I should
don't worry, Maddie. I'll figure out a way to screw this up. Yeah. Trust me on that.
Question number one in Superman movie trivia. Matt, in 2010, this documentary gave us an up-close look at the educational system in the United States.
Was that Waiting for Superman? Nice.
Oh, I see where this is going.
1-0, Matt K. in Superman movie trivia. Question number two. Here he comes. Richard Pryor appeared in Superman 3. He also starred in this 1982 film in which Jackie Gleason's character buys him for his son.
Is that Toys?
I don't know, man. Oh, you're giving that to
him? Whoa. The Toy.
There you go.
The Toy.
Now it's official.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. 1-1, Matt K versus Maddie Ballgame. Let's see if Maddie Ballgame brought his A game. Question number three is over to Matt K. Kevin Spacey, who played Lex Luthor in Superman Returns, voiced the computer Gertie in this 2009 movie that saw Sam Rockwell act up against Sam Rockwell.
Moon.
Great movie.
Absolutely. Everybody's perfect so far. 2-1. Question number four is over to Maddie Ballgame. The 2006 film Hollywoodland revolves around the mysterious death of TV's Superman, George Reeves, who was played by what actor in that movie?
Mr. Ben Affleck.
Bit of a comeback there for Ben.
Man, the guy's been on a roll, I'll tell you that
much.
He
is now, for sure.
Sure has. 2-2, everybody's perfect. Question number five is over to Matt K. Gene Hackman, who played Lex Luthor in the earlier films, also starred in this 1995 submarine movie with Denzel Washington.
It was not The Hunt for Red October. That was...
You do have a lifeline if you need it.
Yeah. All right, take me to the ER.
Oh, we got a trip to the ER. Elias, what was the name of that Gene Hackman, Denzel Washington, 1995 film?
The Alabama football team.
The Alabama football team?
That is your clue.
Why are you giving me a football clue, dude? I barely know anything about Superman movies. Alabama football team.
Steely Dan song.
I don't know anything about Steely Dan either.
Hey, this could bust the game wide open here. It's very competitive here on Cinema Jump.
I don't know, man. How about Das Boot?
I love it.
Denzel was in that, right?
Wow. Let's give him credit for that one.
You got a chance for a steal list. Here.
Submarine
Maddie
movies.
Ballgame.
It's a short list.
Maddie Ballgame was already giving away the answer.
They
know. Call Alabama the Crimson Tide.
Damn it. And I swear to God, I just got Crimson Tide wrong like just a few games ago.
Maddie Ballgame takes the lead 3-2, and question number six is over to him. Richard Donner, who directed the first Superman, also directed this 1994 poker movie in which Jodie Foster plays a con artist named Annabelle.
Ooh, I don't know if I've seen that one. Richard Donner and Jodie Foster.
She's a con artist named Annabelle. You do have a trip to the
ER.
Oh,
is it Maverick?
Damn it, I was hoping he...
Wow, almost got a break there, Matt.
I know.
It is now...
I could have used it.
Now 4-2, Maddie Ballgame, and question number seven is over to Matt K.
I swear I got three of them right, but go
All
on.
All right. Christopher Reeve starred in this 1993 film in which Anthony Hopkins played a butler and Emma Thompson played a housekeeper.
Anthony Hopkins played a butler, and who played the housekeeper?
Emma Thompson played a housekeeper. Christopher Reeves was also in it.
Yeah, what year?
1993. It was nominated for 8 Academy Awards, I believe. That's off the top of my head.
So I should know it is what you're saying.
You should.
Yeah. Oh, man. Was Superman in it? I mean, no, I got nothing.
Maddie Ballgame, you got a chance for a steal here.
Remains of the Day.
Damn.
Wow. It's a slaughter again, yeah. Matt. Boy,
see,
oh boy.
I told you,
it always
dude.
Goes this way. Matty ballgame is up 5-2. Question number 8 is over to him. Finish it up here. Kate Bosworth, who played Lois Lane in Batman and Superman Returns, also starred in 2003's Wonderland as a girlfriend to legendary porn star John Holmes, who was played by what actor in the film?
Oh, what an awful film. Mr. Val Kilmer.
It was a terrible film, but we give you credit there. 6-2. This ball game is over. Wow.
Yeah, here.
How about a handshake?
Well done, sir. Well done.
There was a jawbreaker, we call it. In case it came down to a tie, Matt brought his A game. It would have been this. We would have threw this over to you, Matty, ball game. Who is a better Superman villain, General Zod or Lex Luthor?
Ooh, you've got to kneel before Zod. Terrence Stamp is Zod in Superman 2.
That is incorrect. You would have lost it. You got to go Gene Hackman. We love Hackman over here.
Oh, no way. No way.
The real jawbreaker is this. Age of the second Lex Luthor, Kevin Spacey, currently. Current age of Kevin Spacey. Matt, what do you got?
Closest to?
Sure.
Kevin Spacey, huh? I think he's approaching 60. I would say he is 58 years old.
Elias, lock him in at 58. Matty, ballgame, where would you put him at?
Man, that's where I was going to go as well. I'll go one step further and say, all right, I'll give him the credit, 57.
Oh, we give that to Matty, ballgame, 53.
Oh, 53. Wow. Kevin Spacey's that young?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Have you guys ever seen The Ref? Great
yes.
little film. Dennis,
yeah.
Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dennis Leary, actually, and Kevin Spacey. Oh, fun little film. Fun little film.
I like that movie, actually.
Matt, this brings us to the end of a great job. Before we get out of here, two things. One, we'll give the riddle one more time from Jeremy Boyd. He wrote in this. I have taken a shot to the heart, fell in love with an imperfect man, and have been buried alive. Who am I? Again, Jawheads, be the first to respond to that. You'll win a free Redbox rental and also be able to write next week's clue. We got to thank our guest first and foremost,
yeah,
Matty Ballgame.
Matty Ballgame Robinson.
I mean, the
thank
riddle
you.
Answer obviously is Pat Benatar, right?
Shot to the heart.
Of course. I love it. For the Jawheads listening to this that want to follow you on Twitter, the best place to do so?
Yep. It's good. Matty Ballgame right there on Twitter or go to mattysballgame.com.
Also thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, definitely. And listen to Film Spotting, even though Matty Ballgame isn't on it anymore.
Alas, alas. Please do. Please do. It really is a great show. I'm really, really proud of it.
And you can go back through the archives, Ryan, and get all of Matty's
episodes. That's the best thing about podcasting.
Sure.
Wow. They're all out there still.
And honestly, they're better.
You heard it here. We also got to thank our engineer, the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And we got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to MoviePass and also the new 400 Theaters, Ryan.
There is no better theater in all of Chicago than the new 400 Theaters. If you're in the Rogers Park area, you got to check them out. Full liquor bar, best prices on first-run movies. So check out what's playing at the new 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
And we thank them for their support.
Yeah, so until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.